Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast. It is episode 57. I am Mo, you are L.
Hello.
Hi. How's your week been?
All right, yeah.
Solid?
Solid.
You went to a gig, didn't you?
I did.
How was that?
Good.
Are you going to tell anyone about it?
Sure.
single word answers.
I went to Islington Assembly Hall in North London to see Haken, supported by Vola.
Right, I've never actually been to the Assembly Hall. Is it like a quote-unquote special venue, if you know what I mean?
I have no idea about the history of it, and you've completely put me on the spot.
No, what I mean is, like, is it kind of like a... Is it a chapel-y kind of vibe or anything like that?
It sort of looks like... Well, yeah, an Assembly Hall. It kind of looks like...
It's like a town hall kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's laid out like a theatre.
So. Oh, right, okay. That's the kind of thing I meant. Yeah, it's got a slightly nice vibe to it.
No, I think I've actually just fooled you. It's not like a theatre, but...
Oh, this is...
This is painful.
Yeah, never do PR for this place, El.
There's a balcony, and then there's a bit on the ground where you can stand. So there's two floors. So when I meant theatre-style venue, I mean, there's a stage.
Okay.
A ground floor where you'd stand and a balcony part of it.
Bog standard London venue, forget it.
It was nice, but it wasn't particularly ornate. It had a very cool Latin shield on the top of the stage, which
it was
coat of arms.
Right, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And it had a Latin motto on it. Per omium something. And I kept meaning to Google it and I didn't.
So. Brilliant.
Why are you always making me
It probably
me
stands
fail?
For bog standard venue. That's what it stands
Why
for.
Why are you always asking
Forget
questions?
It.
I've not Googled the answers.
No bands ever go there. Boring.
I only said that because it
just sounds like it should be a cool place
it
to
does,
go.
It does, doesn't but. It? And it was quite intimate, actually. I was on the balcony, but it felt like you were still quite close.
And you went to see prog... Not really prog metalers?
Yeah, I mean...
They're kind of in the Venn diagram of bands that fall into Hammer's world.
So I'll do
Because
I'll
lots
do
of people
Vola
that like
Jemmy
that like them.
Vola were excellent.
Cool.
Very, very cool band. I would say they are progressive metal. So...
On the heavier side of that whole stuff that Jerry and Progmat cover that we sometimes do, basically.
Yeah, they are kind of on the sort of heavier end of that. From Copenhagen. And they're sort of... Yeah, the progressive kind of thing, like, where you've got kind of, like, heavy bass and quite intense vocals and amazing melody. The one thing I would say about Vola is that all of their songs have a fucking awesome melody. They all have really massive hooks, like vocal hooks that you can grab onto, and they're the kind of band where you'll listen to them over and over again and they'll just worm their way into your brain.
Which is something you always do.
You'll just, yeah. And you'll just feel like you've known them forever, and that's the great thing watching their set. There was no song where I was bored. Every song I was like, oh, I love this song. This has got a really cool melody. Like,
they go down well with the Haken faithful.
They did, actually. People were getting into it. And I think Vola are still finding their feet performance-wise. It was quite an awkward setup on the stage because Haken had all their stuff on the stage, so Vola were kind of slightly pushed into a corner, their drummer was kind of in the back right corner, and singer was sort of towards the front, and then the other two kind of fit around them. So they look very comfortable on stage, but I think they're still kind of finding their presence and their way with sort of the musical performance aspect. But having said that, they're all incredible musicians and they played fantastically and they played with a lot of confidence. I was really, really impressed, and I want to go and see them do their own show because they've done quite a lot of support slots, I think, but not really much of their own thing, and I want to see it. Listen to Vola. I would really back that band. I think they're fantastic, really good at songcraft, you know.
That's cool. What about the headliners?
And if you like heavy bands, you'll probably like them.
Yeah.
Haken. So I have never been too sure about Haken, which is why I went to check them out. I would say they're quite like a smaller version of Dream Theatre. You've got kind of they are a prog band, I would say. You know, the crowd there was very much a prog crowd. As you mentioned, Jerry, the editor of Prog Magazine, he was there having a fantastic time.
Excellent.
A few drinks down. And what I would say is that the crowd were really, really into it. The fans that were there obviously loved the songs. They were singing them back. There was a moment where I was watching them, and the front row, rather than moshing, were swaying their bodies and their arms to the music, because it does get proggy. They're one of those bands where they'll play a song and they'll go off for 5 minutes and do a proggy interlude. They're all incredible musicians, like totally, totally spot on and virtuosos. For me, I can find that a bit dry. I prefer to listen to songs that have more of, not a typical song structure exactly, but again, have that melody that Vola do so well that I was just talking about. And Haken for me can be a little bit dry and proggy because I'm not so fussed about those kind of interludes. So my attention was wandering a bit with them. But the crowd really into it. They had a lot of energy. They had a keyboard player. We've talked before about bands like Powerwolf, where the keyboard players are kind of like the star of the show.
Yeah, well, they wish they were.
they come out to the front of the stage and they really, really perform and they're really into it. And the same with Haken, their keyboardist was kind of strapping on a guitar, like coming to the front of the stage and playing with the guitarist and kind of getting involved.
I feel like being a keyboardist has a bit more currency in prog music.
I think it does, definitely.
It's kind of like a cool, you're in the cooler part of the band and that's hierarchy.
That's what I'd say, actually. They're quite a nerdy band, but it felt sort of like a safe space. Like everyone in the room was there because they're like nerdy prog and they were all just like unashamedly loving it, like no guilty pleasure whatsoever.
Too right.
The singer came out one time in like a pair of glasses. He was very kind of like flamboyant and quite like
very specific thing to
not like a pair of glasses like for seeing, like kind of those glasses with lines on.
Oh, well, like Kanye glasses.
Yeah. Kind of came out and they were sort of doing like it's because they've got some sort of sci-fi themes. It felt a little bit sci-fi. Probably if you're a Haken fan, you maybe know more about that aspect of the show than me. I was like, oh, he's come out in glasses.
Yeah, probably specific reference points and all the rest of it.
Yeah. But it was, that's what it was. It was a progressive metal band. And again, me and Jerry were talking about this. He was saying they're definitely metal. They've got riffs in there. And they have got heavier bits. They have got riffier bits where they kind of get into it. But then because they go off on these prog odysseys, I would say they kind of still lie more in that camp than they do in our camp.
Interesting.
If you're a Dream Theater fan, probably love it. So
Dream Theater.
And I would definitely say, judging by their performance, they're going to go on to do bigger venues and bigger things because they've got their show nailed and they've got a very captive fan base who seem to really love what they do.
Awesome. But in the grand scheme of things, Vola win the day.
Vola win the day. 100%.
Lots of shit going on in the metal world this week, aren't there? Jesus.
I can't keep up.
The one thing a lot of people have been asking us about, and we'll get to some particular questions on it later, Chris Fenn has left Slipknot.
Yeah.
Do we care?
I care in the sense that it's a member of Slipknot, but I'm not sure I care specifically about Chris. Do you know what I mean? Like, we always used to refer to Slipknot as the nine, the non-tet. You know, it's always with Slipknot, obviously.
As they're famously known, the non-tet.
But you kind of do, and obviously it's a very obvious thing to say. Everyone's got their number, and it's a thing that there's nine of them, and obviously, the sad loss of Paul Gray, whatever the circumstances were around Joey's departure, obviously there was illness and there was some inter-band stuff going on there. They've had to bring in a couple of other people, but they're still kind of sort of doing the nine thing, but it feels less like the original Slipknot because it is, and now Chris has left, that leaves us with six original members.
Or like certainly most well-known members.
Yeah, obviously you can go back before they got famous and there were people like
Donny Boy.
Donny was in it. But if we're talking about the nine as people recognise them, we're now on six of the nine, so two-thirds of the nine.
Getting to weird maths.
I'm doing some maths. So it's quite a weird one, isn't it? You know, if you consider that's the original lineup. I mean, many, many bands lose/replace members, but with something like Slipknot, when they came out, it was we are the nine.
Yeah, it's such a gang mentality.
This unit, all dressing the same and, kind of like you said, having that shared mentality of what they do. It is quite weird now that it's six with extra people.
It's an odd one, isn't it? There's been a lot of joking about Chris leaving because obviously he was the quote-unquote percussionist in Slipknot, which meant he did kind of extra drumming, and of course he was twatting bins and all that kind of added to the chaos and the overall kind of imagery and vibe. of the bands. If you don't know Chris, by the way, you've not a big Slipknot fan, he's the nose guy, long nose lad. Which was quite an iconic mask as well. It was one of the most famous. I can't really think of Slipknot live without him wanking his nose off.
It's just
such a classic part of their shtick they always do.
It is a classic thing.
And it sounds really stupid, but those are the little things that that kind of add to a band's legacy. And yeah, like you said, they were such a gang, and I think it's so rare for a band to go two decades without at least one or two fairly significant lineup changes.
Yeah.
And when you've got nine people in the band, there's a lot of room there for people to fall out or issues to come up. It's inevitable that it was going to happen at some point.
And I think the part of the reason it hurts with Slipknot so much is just because people feel such an affinity with them. And if you're a maggot, you are part of a very exclusive club. And it hurts when someone from a band that kind of feels like a real, like you said, a unit, a real family, isn't there anymore. So I do get why people are sad about it, and people have asked us a few questions about it that we'll get to later. But I just think this is all the reality of a band, evolving and getting bigger and getting to a point where they're not just a band, they're a business, they're a life for all these people. And there's a lot of people invested in Slipknot now, and, you know, the machine's going to roll on. So it'll be interesting to see if they add another member. I don't feel like it's as important as replacing Joey and Paul, but like you said, it's the nine. It's such an important part of their thing. So we'll see, I guess. But yeah, a lot falling out as well. I know there's stuff to do with you was taking the band to court or something, and Corey's been saying stuff on Twitter, but I don't think we'll get into that until it's a bit clearer exactly what happened. But
it really sucks as well that there is an issue around this and that there has been a falling out, because it sounds really horrible and morbid to say it, but you never know if something's going to happen to someone or people are going to die, and it just sucks when this happens, because, you know, you could end up with a situation where things are never reconciled, and
a group
of people that were very tightly knit and not anymore, and kind of for what, you know, it always ends up as being some, you know, dramatic reason or financial reason, and it's a bit sad, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's not as quite as vitriolic as all that. I imagine there's a lot of bitterness around it now because of what's already been said in the media, but fuck knows really. But there is one bin that will remain unpanged for the next tour we just have for everyone. We'll see what happens anyway. Stay tuned to metalhammer.com. We'll have all the ongoing news about all that. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of the specifics later on. Now, this is something that's had me watching Skyscanner for flights in recent days.
Oh, I wonder why.
Oh, mate, let's talk about it. What's going on?
Metallica are doing S&M again.
They're doing S&M. This is, for me, one of the most unexpected but fucking awesome things Metallica have announced in the last few years. S&M, of course, their hugely aspirational orchestral live show that they did over a couple of dates 20 years ago and then put on the S&M album, kind of went down as one of their most interesting experiments. And now, in recognition of that, and I think it's also, they're like opening up a new venue in San Francisco or something. It's like a big arena/stadium venue that's opening. And I think Metallica are the first band to play it. And they're bringing back S&M, so they're bringing back the San Francisco Orchestra. I guess, what do you think of the first S&M album?
Yeah,
quite a big part of their legacy.
I love it. And do you know what? I probably heard that before I heard a lot of other Metallica songs, to be honest with you, because I heard it when I was in high school, when my friends played it to me. And I didn't really know much about Metallica, so it was kind of almost like my introduction in a way. And I just thought it was really, really cool. And then over the years, it's grown into something else as I've learned more about the band, and it kind of takes on a different context. And I can't tell you how many weddings I've been to where people have had S&M, like one of the songs is there,
really?
Walking down the aisle music.
That's awesome.
Or having it played while people have their food, because it's sort of like you can play it in a gathering of non-metalers and they don't know it's metal.
Yeah. It's metal, like, but you can play it in front of your nan.
It's like a secret way to get people to listen to metal. And so I guess I've sort of grown up with it in a way. You know, it's 20 years old at this point, and yeah, I probably first heard it when I was in high school.
Yeah, I mean, funnily enough, I think actually it wasn't the first Metallica album I heard, but I do think the first time I ever heard Nothing Else Matters was the live version that they released off S&M, because I distinctly remember when I actually got round to picking up the Black Album, thinking that the this sounds mental to say this, but thinking that the recorded version of Nothing Else Matters sounded a bit flat.
Yeah,
because it didn't have all that extra stuff in the background.
That's exactly what happened to me as well. I heard the one on S&M first, and I was going to say actually that that's my favourite song on there, because I just think it's so well done, and I just, yeah, heard it for the first time on there. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's interesting to look back now. I was just kind of doing a bit of research around the album, because it's been a few years since I've listened to it actually. And when it came out, there was a kind of a bit of a mixed reception to it. Obviously, you had certain metal fans that weren't a fan of that, because it, you know, again, brought a bit of a softer vibe to a lot of their songs. A lot of the press kind of thought maybe they'd bitten off a bit more than they could chew with trying to put these big orchestral elements under kind of established metal tracks. And I kind of see what they mean by that, because I think the album's great as well. But for me, I think it's a lot of the slower stuff, and especially a lot of 90s material, that works best on S&M. I think when you're trying to just stuff an orchestra under like Battery, I think there's a bit too much going on,
isn't there?
And it doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't know if it works quite as well as, like, I think Memory Remains sounds amazing. Bleeding Me sounds unbelievable. We just said like Nothing Else Matters. Hero of the Day is a bit of a controversial track for many. It's a bit of a guilty pleasure. Actually, no, it's not a guilty pleasure. I like that song, and I think the orchestra version's really good.
There are no guilty pleasures.
Exactly. Fuck guilty pleasures. And I think the best old school track on there is For Whom the Bell Tolls. Again, it kind of suits itself, because it's such an epic song.
Dramatic,
but it's a bit slower,
yeah,
and it's a bit more plodding and methodical than a lot of the thrashier stuff. What do you think of No Leaf Clover and Minus Human? Because those were written especially for the album, and they never played Minus Human again. I think they've played No Leaf Clover a few times since.
I've never been massively fussed, if I'm honest.
Right.
I think I like them as part of the whole, but they're not like my favourite songs or anything.
Yeah, it's interesting that they never really, as I said, I don't think they played Minus Human again, and they didn't put studio versions of them on any albums as far as I know. I do like No Leaf Clover. I wouldn't mind seeing that live, but again, I guess it'll be something maybe they'll bring back for this. So
it's weird, because I was reading some of those reviews as well, and I was quite surprised to find that there was negative stuff said about it. And I think actually your appraisement of it is very fair about it sounding, it's sort of working better on some songs than others. But I think for me, when I heard it at the time, I was like, this is just cool, and I didn't have any sort of background or any context or didn't know much about metal or anything like that. I just heard it and went, I really like this. So I think it's always worth remembering that you can break things down and you can be critical about them, but if you've never heard them before, or they come at a time and a place where no one had really done it before, there is, I don't think you should sort of remove that excitement or joy from something.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? I can definitely appreciate why it was a little divisive at the time, but I think, you know, that's what Metallica have always done, really. They've never been afraid to just do something a bit different, and sometimes they get it catastrophically wrong and sometimes they nail it. And you know, I mean, Metallica have had a giant target on their back ever since the Black Album, really.
But now
earlier than that, in a lot of ways.
Now it seems so normal for metal bands to work with orchestras. You know, we just had a few weeks back, Parkway Drive brought a string quartet to Alexander Palace, and it was like, wow, this is cool. But at the same time, it wasn't entirely unexpected, in the sense of bands have brought classical musicians out before or recorded different versions of songs. I don't know, you know, how, I guess they were pretty pioneering in that sense of they were kind of the first big band to do it, or was there other bands before?
I think
we've actually done a feature on this. There was another band before it, but I can't remember who it was. We have to go back through our hammers from like 4 years ago to when there was a feature about orchestral music.
Didn't Deep Purple do something like this?
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
I think Deep Purple did something. But
in the sort of the metal world.
Right, yeah, not a band that had written
like
a song as heavy as, you know, Disposable Heroes or something. Like, it's just not, wasn't on anyone's radar at all at that point.
But now it's almost commonplace, but. And then it's funny to sort of think back 20 years and think how revolutionary it was probably for this time.
Yeah, totally. But and also as well, I think people forget that Metallica had kind of almost compositionally speaking, they had orchestral kind of vibes to some of their songs. Cliff Burton was a massive classical music fan.
Loved Bach.
He loved Bach, and Orion was basically written like an orchestral piece, really. So this isn't, you know, it wasn't that far out of left field for them. But yeah, as I say, when it worked, I think some of the stuff on there is absolutely gorgeous, and I've been looking up flights.
Yeah.
Flights to San Francisco are less than £300 at the moment, and that's not a nothing amount, but it's not too bad for flights to California, and it's a bit like, very tempting. Oh well. In other news, I will be, but I think we both will be out. Marilyn Manson's nearly finished his new album already, apparently. You ready for a new Manson album already?
Yeah.
It's only been 18 months since the last one.
No, it's good, but I was thinking about this. He's not one to leave massive gaps between albums. He actually consistently puts things out, like, probably an average of every 3 years.
Probably.
He's not never, like, gone away for ages and ages and then come back again, or had some sort of thing where he doesn't want to write albums for a while. He's sort of consistently written them, so good on Manson, I say.
Good on Manson, yeah. The only one I can think of is... I think there was a bit of a gap between Golden Age and Eat Me, Drink Me. But even that was like maybe 4 years tops.
Yeah, that would be the most it would have been.
He's never gone on hiatus, has he?
I was very excited because he posted a picture on Instagram saying that he was almost finished. And he was also wearing a Mr. Meeseeks hat. Mr. Meeseeks from Rick and Morty.
Wow, amazing. Yeah. He's Marilyn Manson. Look at him.
Exactly.
like The Last Manson a bit more than I did, but
oh, I think
fair to say it was really well received. I think the last couple have been really well received. So for me, I thought Pale Emperor was great. I think most people seem to have really enjoyed Heaven Upside Down as well. I still would like to believe there's a truly great album left in Marilyn Manson. Like, not just a really good one, a truly, like, you know, something genuinely worthy of his legacy.
I think you're too harsh on Manson.
I'm definitely
not. He's putting
not.
Albums out every couple of years and they're all good. So
they're not all good, come
they
on.
Are.
They're not all they good.
All
Eat
good.
Me, Drink Me was awful.
It wasn't awful.
It was.
It wasn't.
Not good album.
It's just not as good as some other albums.
Well, most of the albums. I think we said this before, but I really like... oh God, what was one after Eat Me, Drink Me? My brain's just gone. The one with We're From America on it and... Goddamn Armageddon and all those ones. What was that one called?
Golden Age of Grotesque.
The High End of Low?
The High End of Low.
The High End of Low? Yeah. I think that's a really, really underrated record. So
He's got nothing else
to offer to that conversation, really.
Sequence.
I said on Twitter yesterday that I don't know if any band ever has had a 3-album run as strong as Antichrist Superstar, Mechanical Animals and Hollywood. And Golden Age of Grotesque is right up there as well for me, you know.
I like all of them.
I know you do.
But also,
good for you.
I'm interested because now he's sort of officially got this partnership going with Tyler Bates. They've done the last two records together.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm just interested in kind of how sort of like bluesy, southern, rocky, laid-backy it's going to sound. Because they've sort of been doing that a bit in the last couple of records. And he tagged Shooter Jennings in his Instagram post as well, Outlaw Country.
I also hope that Manson, being obviously really inspired and motivated to carry on making new music, means that he's in a decent place, because I don't really know, but I do find it hard to still not worry about where he's at sometimes, judging by his live performances and that kind of stuff. He's still quite up and down, and I don't know. I just want Marilyn Manson to be happy and banging out new music, I guess.
You know, how much is a performance and how much is real life? That's the thing. He might be perfectly fine.
Well, if it is just a performance, then he should sort that the fuck out, because that's not how that should work. but yeah, I don't know. We'll see, man. Last time I saw him was Heavy Montreal last year, and it just felt a bit like not quite there for me.
We did an interview with Tyler Bates, and some of the things he said really made me laugh. He said that when Manson's in the studio, sometimes he'll just order random things off Amazon. Like a device that makes a noise that'll hide in someone's house and they won't be able to find. Like,
that's amazing.
Like random like novels and things like that. And I was just like, I like the idea of him kind of sitting there and he's supposed to be writing an album and he's like, what weird thing can I buy on the internet?
Cheeky
now?
Uncle Maz are just having a laugh. Turned 50 this year, a couple of months back. What absolute legend. Yeah, we will see what happens with that very, very soon. This MySpace news this week is a bit
Yeah, it's weird,
mad.
Isn't it?
What's going on?
They've lost their music from between the years of...
I think it was 2003 and 2015, is that right?
I don't know, that's a long... Sounds like a long period.
Yeah, MySpace lost over a decade of music. It was like 50 million songs or something they've lost. They did, I think, a server migration or something like that. And they lost all the music that had ever been put on MySpace in that time, which is... I know that MySpace seems... Well, it is a bit old hat now, isn't it? It has been for the better part of 10 years, I guess. But, you know, it was still a functioning site. It still had a lot of music on it. It still had a pretty high user base. And for a long time, it was a massive part of alternative culture. And for that to all just be gone now is kind of scary, really.
It's really scary because we've got this issue nowadays of archiving content because we're living in a society where everything is temporary. Everything is streamed. We're not owning music anymore. We're streaming music. We're not owning TV films anymore. We're streaming them. So you end up in this situation, who is archiving them? Who is keeping records of them? If the servers go down, are we going to lose the information? And it is a weird thing because it's a contemporary problem. We've only really had to deal with this in the last decade or so. In terms of games, I was talking about this with someone yesterday, how weird it is now that you buy a game and as soon as you've got it, there's like usually an update on it already, and then the game evolves because there are different updates that come through. So are they ever really archived? You know, we've just got this weird transient content. So this is kind of like maybe a warning sign.
Yeah, like
what would actually happen
if like Spotify went down or something, like properly went down and had a similar situation? Because there's no reason it couldn't happen to any prominent streaming platform.
But that's the thing, though. You hope that those bands that are on Spotify have got archives of their own content. With MySpace, I don't know how many of those musicians would have archives of their music, or if they just put it, forgot about it, carried on for 10 years.
Oh yeah, totally. But I mean,
having access.
Yeah, and what would it do to the industry? What would it do to music fans? You know, I buy vinyl as a way to kind of look, I guess, supersede the fact that I don't pay for CDs anymore. I still pay for music on iTunes and stuff sometimes. But really, it's like, if a platform like Spotify or Deezer or whatever went down, you would just have... I mean, most of the music I listened to for the last 8 years, I just wouldn't have anymore.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to me. We put so much faith in these platforms and these websites and software and everything else. I sound like an old funny daddy the way I just said that. But you know what I mean?
Internet websites.
Yes, we put so much faith in these internet websites that you just think, what would happen? Most of my photos I've taken in the last 10 years are all on Facebook. Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
I know that's getting a bit out of our wheelhouse for this, but all my photos are on Facebook. Loads of my records are online. And I mean like public records, not music records. Like all my music's on Spotify. I use Netflix more than I use DVDs now. It's just crazy, isn't it? Mm. Like if a couple of things just suddenly went belly up and it all went wrong, I think it would cause a bit of a kerfuffle in popular culture, shall we say.
But it's also kind of crazy because MySpace was trying to reinvent itself as a music website. And, you know, I'm not saying it was massively successful in that, but that was kind of the idea. Because Justin Timberlake had a hand in it.
I was going to say, does he still own it?
I'm not sure, but he definitely had an attempt to revive it. And
I mean, who gave him that advice? Do you know what you should invest in? MySpace. Really? Yeah. Definitely.
But you know, maybe you had a plan to turn it all around and focus on music and all the rest of it, but you just never know how things are going to come out.
Well, who knows? So yeah.
That's weird though, isn't
it? That sucks. Who's your favourite MySpace generation band? Did you get into any bands from that era?
I think I was a bit too old. Like, I was on MySpace, but I didn't have an emo fringe.
Well, I got into Job for a Cowboy through MySpace. They're a big MySpace band. Remember them? Panic at the Disco came through MySpace, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few kind of few that have lasted the distance, I think. Broken Side is the last one that always comes to mind. Just one of
Hilarious.
The worst bands that ever lived.
Yeah.
Ever lived.
Yeah.
Oh, well. In much more positive news, Amon and Martha back. Yes. One of the best metal bands going. Have you heard the new single?
No.
You should. It's fucking great.
How have I missed this?
Well, it only came out yesterday.
Okay.
Quite late on yesterday as well, I think.
Well, that's probably why then. That's probably asleep.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, the Kings of Viking Metal.
But it's called Raven Flight.
Exactly. Ah! Raven's Flight. I don't know if this is the album title or what's going on, but they're talking about Berserkers a lot. There's some awesome album art, or maybe it's single art. Anyway, there's some awesome artwork out there as well that's metal as hell. So it's got this, what I presume is some kind of Viking berserker warrior, like dressed in a bearskin and axes, just screaming into the camera, in theory.
Just your average Friday night.
Oh, it's just awesome. Just one of the best bands ever, and they just seem to be getting bigger and bigger. They did the Roundhouse on the last cycle, headline Bloodstock, their show's getting massive. I think they could be becoming an even more significant force for metal in the coming years, which is really exciting.
Very exciting.
Do you concur?
I do concur. I hope they make some merchandise of like a cuddly raven or something.
That's a good idea. If anyone involved in a Monomath or their label is listening, get a raven or a cuddly berserker.
Ravens though, Hugin and Munin were the Odin's ravens, weren't they?
I didn't know that. I've been reading Neil Gaiman's Norse mythology book recently, but I haven't got that far into it yet, so yeah. I'm topping up. Most of my Norse mythology has come from God of War and the Thor films.
Fair enough.
Which isn't good enough really.
Do
better. So yeah, Amon Amarth back. The new album will be out later this year. We're excited because they are one of the most consistent and awesome bands going. It's going to be good. Should we take some questions from the readers at facebook.com/metalhammerreaders?
Zach Wells asks, how many members have to leave for it to stop being Slipknot?
9.
I was going to say 4.5. What's this over half?
I think, to be honest with you, I feel like as long as Corey and Clown are in that band, I can still believe that the spirit of Slipknot is being carried through it. And that's obviously bearing in mind that, like you said, you never know what can happen. You know, if someone passed away or someone left under really non-negotiable circumstances, there's loads of reasons bands might carry on. But you know, Corey is the voice of Slipknot and Clown is kind of the spirit of Slipknot, really, isn't he?
I would agree with
such
all
an artistic
that you said,
level as well.
But I'd add to that, excuse me, I'd add to that Jim Root.
Yeah.
Because obviously we know he writes a lot and he was, you know, he used to be with Corey in Stone Sour and obviously is not in that band anymore because he writes for Slipknot, so probably can't really ignore that.
Yeah, fair point.
So I'd say
fair
the
point.
Three of them are kind of the core.
I mean, it's, you know, Slipknot without Sid in the band would be weird to me as well. Mm. He was always the one that was always grabbing headlines for his shenanigans at gigs, and the gas mask is one of the iconic Slipknot masks to me.
They're also iconic, aren't they?
They are, yeah, but yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's hard to, I mean, yeah, but yeah, I think adding Jim to that's pretty fair. I mean, Mick as well. Like, he's such a massive presence. His mask has kind of not really evolved very much, so it's stayed quite iconic and a massive part
scary.
Of Slipknot's identity.
A scary mask.
He's a big, scary man. I don't know him personally. He's probably lovely in real life, to be honest. But yeah, we will see. And anyway, you never know what might happen in the future. Chris and Jerry might not be in the band now, but as we've seen with countless bands over the years, burned bridges can be rebuilt. I felt quite deep the way I said that.
Yeah,
that's quite good.
Quite deep.
I should put that on an Instagram post.
I was going to say, that's an inspirational Instagram post. Hashtag metal inspo.
Why not?
Your new series.
Another Slipknot question from Michael Jolly. Do you think Slipknot is starting to become more about the money than the music? It's quite a loaded question.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, isn't there? I think you mentioned earlier basically how once a band is set in motion, there are costs associated with that. Once a band gets to a certain level, there are a certain number of people that you have to pay to keep it going.
Yeah.
So there are, you know, there are financial pressures there, and if you want those people that you employ to carry on being employed, you have to keep the band going, and that's a lot of responsibility for the band members, you know, to have those people's livelihoods on their shoulders. So I think that has to be a consideration. But I also don't think that they would do it if it was just for the money, because I'm sure there's other things the main members could do, slash they've already earned some money to be comfortable. So you'd like to think there's an element of it in there. that is still not about the money. And if you speak to someone like Clown, he would, you know, he just wants to talk about art for days. So he's obviously got his heart in it in that respect.
Yeah, totally. I could not agree more. I think Slipknot is, I mean, saying things when people say is Slipknot or is a band just about the money, it's kind of like that's acting like, you know, they could all just sack it off now and just live off their legacy forever, which just is probably isn't true, to be honest. There's 9 or whatever it is now, 8, 7. There's a lot of people in that band. They all rely on that for their income. And even though they are one of the biggest metal bands of all time, you know, this is still their job. Like, this is what they make their living off. You can't just kind of... I don't think it's really fair to turn around to bands and kind of act like they don't have the right to continue their livelihood just because they face controversy and, you know, big issues arising and all that kind of stuff. Like, people weren't happy when Slayer continued after Jeff passed away. People weren't happy when I don't know, there's a million examples you could bring up, aren't it? But bands are going to evolve and things are going to change. You're not going to last 20 years in the music industry without suffering a few big bumps along the way. And I think I don't have any issue at all with Slipknot still existing as they are right now. And I think, you know, if it gets to a point where people think the music is really suffering and all that kind of stuff, I get that. But to me, people were still invested in Slipknot. People still care about what Slipknot have to say. And they're allowed to make money.
Yeah.
You know,
but
their art.
It's not just... There's so many members that it has to be split between. And it's not just them either. It's everything around them. It's management.
Exactly.
It's the crew. It's the people that provide all the stage gear. It's every single aspect of that, because those people all expect at a certain point that the machine's going to kick back into gear again and that they're you know, going to be re-employed. There's just a lot of people in that network.
If there's a band as heavy as Slipknot that are doing things on a scale to the extent that they are, headlining festivals, getting like top 10, top 5, number 1 albums, all that kind of stuff, like, metal thrives because of that. Metal is only going to be in a better place when you've got a band that size spreading music that heavy around the world. So as far as I'm concerned, like, don't go anywhere.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
But I do hope the new album's good. I think they need a really great album, though. I will add that as well.
I like the world more with Slipknot in it.
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. Do you want to do this next one?
Sure.
All very zeitgeisty, these questions.
Rich asks, with so many bands either straight up incorporating orchestras into their sound or otherwise reinventing their songs with an orchestra, do you reckon we should have a heavy metal proms? And if so, which bands would you pick to fill out the lineup?
I bet we've got some of the same ones here.
Bet we have.
Well, I've gone for some power metal, battle metal big hitters. Nightwish is a no-brainer to me. With Incantation as well, who have actually done a proms style
gig. I also
gig.
Had those people.
Sabaton as well, very dramatic.
Yeah.
They've got lots of synth. And kind of an obvious one, I guess, but Iron Maiden as well.
You would put them, wouldn't you?
Well, I would, but because it's predictable, I did pick out some particular tracks. So I picked out Passchendaele, Fear of the Dark, Blood Brothers and Clansman, just off the very top of my head, as
good,
songs
it?
That I think would sound amazing with a live orchestra.
I picked out the symphonic bands as well. I also picked out Ghost for all their choral type stuff. Korn, Jonathan Davis, obviously with a solo record, he's kind of done a lot of stuff with orchestras, and there was the DVD he had, do you remember that, a few years back?
Yep, sure.
Where he kind of sung some of the Korn songs and some of his own songs with an orchestra. Parkway Drive, mentioned earlier, they had the string quartet at their show. Dimmu Borgir, Aeonian was full of choral sounds. That would be pretty amazing to hear on a stage. Yeah, so I was kind of thinking of which bands now have worked with classical instruments.
Yeah. Works for me.
Yeah.
I would go to that gig.
I would too.
Scotty asks, if you had to get stuck on an island with one band, who would it be? His would be a monomorph. There you go. That's a lot of beard.
Yeah.
On one island.
Well, I would think that a Monomath would be a good bet, Scotty, because Johan Hegg, I think, would know how to survive in the wild. So if I had to get stuck in an island with one band, I'd want it to be a band that had members that knew survival techniques. So I was thinking along the lines of Till Lindemann, who survived, well, he went on a trip to the Yukon, and sort of he was canoeing and fishing and all that kind of stuff. He's very outdoorsy, so he probably knows his way around, I don't know, making a fire, skinning an animal,
you've thought about this much more smartly than I have.
I was also thinking, again, to go back to Parkway Drive, Winston.
Oh, I've got Parkway.
He works out a lot, so I imagine he'd be quite good at, like, lifting logs.
Well, I've thought about this totally the wrong way, because I put Parkway Drive, but I was just thinking there'd be a good laugh to just hang out and surf with.
After you've made yourself a shelter and ensured you're not going to die, then you could just have a lovely time.
I basically thought of this as being like a nice weekend away with some bands.
I thought
just
of it as
drinking
like
on the beach, having a laugh.
Being in an episode of Naked and Afraid.
I think that's probably what Scott was asking, actually, but I just thought about it totally wrong. I've got like Lamb of God here just because Randy likes surfing as well, and that could be a good laugh. Just go and take some nice photos of the sunset and Instagram them.
As long as you don't get eaten by a pack of wolves.
I'm definitely...
As long as Randy knows how to deter a pack of wolves.
I also put Slipknot just because there's loads of them, so if you got bored of one member, you could just go hang out with a different one.
I thought you were going to say, in case there's nothing to eat and you could start killing them and eating them.
No, that is... No.
Which one would you start with?
Well, Slipknot. Probably Mick, because there's loads of him. He'd last a while. Good big chunk of leg would last you a couple of days, I reckon.
It's gone dark.
I would definitely be dead very quickly based on this. Just me and Parkway driving, nothing to eat, not knowing what to do.
I'm really shit at survival, and like my levels of physical fitness dramatically fluctuate. So I definitely was looking for somebody who could bring that to the party.
All right.
Who else has got mad skills?
Did we do a feature with Diet is Murder when they went fishing once years ago? So they could probably be good.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we went fishing with Diet is Murder years ago, so that could be good.
So like Matt Heafy knows martial arts.
To protect us against crabs.
Kick a lion in the face or something.
What desert island has a lion on it?
I don't know.
I really don't think that works.
I know there's dangerous animals that come out at night.
Yeah, but not a lion.
No, it's probably not a lion.
Chuck Billy has a speedboat, so he could just bring that.
Oh, and he knows about like Native American folklore and stuff like that.
Yeah, we could just...
He could tell some really good stories.
Do one of those cool meditational things he does.
Exactly, yeah.
Like the sauna room things that they do.
Sweat lodge type thing.
Sweat lodge, that's the word I was looking
for.
You
sort of find yourself and centre yourself a bit.
Yeah, see, I'm just having like a nice spiritual weekend away. that's my desire.
I'm scared of wild animals.
You're getting mauled by lions somehow on an island somewhere.
I don't know how it happened.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past me.
Such an L thing to do, get mauled by lions. Let's move on.
Drake asks, what would be a good set list?
Not that Drake. No, that'd be
what would be a good set list for SNM2 that Metallica just announced?
Yes, right. This is good. Well, obviously, the big songs I mentioned earlier, Memory Remains, Bleeding Me, Behind the Bell Tolls, Nothing Else Matters, I'll definitely keep those in. Again, I've kind of gone for like mostly kind of slower ones that have a bit more space to kind of squeeze in those orchestral elements and pull the song out of itself a bit. So I'd love to see Unforgiven 1, 2 and 3, just like all three of them back to back. I think that could be epic. Fade to Black. A favourite Metallica song, which could just be gorgeous. I just think about that last kind of minute section would just sound amazing. The Day That Never Comes.
I have that.
Yeah, that would sound cool,
really
I reckon.
That would be cool, yeah.
I think those melody, that new, 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 just lends itself. And Halo on Fire as well, just because.
Well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Amazing. Especially, again, the last minute, that Hello Darkness, say goodbye. I think that would, like, sounds epic with some strings stuck underneath. Those are the ones that came to mind for me. You got any more?
I thought it'd be funny to hear Spit Out the Bone.
Just what? Because
I don't know how it would go.
Some nuts.
Yeah, I know, but that's why I'd want to hear it.
Why not?
Because it'd be so different.
An orchestral Terminator metal anthem.
I just think it would be wild.
Sure.
And I'd want to hear St. Anger. I know not everyone likes St. Anger, blah, 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 but I'd want to hear it.
That would be a mess, wouldn't it?
No, I think it'd be all right.
but with strings under that.
Again, it's
my lifestyle determines my death style.
Yeah, again, it's one that I'd want to hear. I think you need to have a few wild cards in there and stuff that's going to polarise people. I like the idea that you can pull it off and people would have to eat their words.
That would be pretty epic if they could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, very envious of people that are going to that SNM2 gig. I want to go.
Atlas Rise would be good too, I think.
Yeah, that would be great. I do think a few of the tracks off Heart of Mine would work, actually. That is it for this week. We've got about one more week in the UK of the Ghost issue being on sale. We still get a few people tweeting us looking for one of the two covers that we put out there. So if you're still looking for a cover, just pay attention to the Metal Hammer Twitter, because we will be retweeting people who are pointing out where you can get hold of them. We've seen people trading the covers to get both sets, all that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
The Ghost fam is coming on strong, but you've only got one more week to get that Ghost cover with the two separate covers and all the special gifts that come with each one. So get out there, get on that. I'm going to go to the World Metal Congress this weekend.
Awesome.
So that should be fun. It's in Bethnal Green in London. If you're about, there's going to be talks all weekend about the state of metal today, shedding a particular look at, not shedding.
Shedding a light on.
Shedding a light on, thank you. That's what I'm looking at. Shedding a light on global metal and the issues affecting metal on the global scale in particular. There's some bands playing as well. Loads of big names, including Metal Hammer writers Dom Lawson and Tom O'Boyle, will be on panels. It should be really good.
I sadly can't go.
Why?
Because I'm going to Taiwan.
Oh! We'll talk about that in a few weeks' time. That's going to be awesome. Yeah, Elle's going off to Taiwan on a top secret metal mission for us. It's going to be big. So stay tuned for more news about that. Yeah, in the meantime, stay metal, stay friendly. Look after each other, everybody.
That's a nice message.
It is a nice message. Yeah. Hail Satan as well. See you later.
Bye.